broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
It's kind of a dog-eat-dog world out there.
Sometimes you get nervous if they get, like...
I have never really been too active in terms of being any kind of activist.
Hola, Jay.
Where are you?
I have money in the carpool, and we're going to the dropout.
You know, I have not decided what I'm going to do in 2012. I don't think...
I am gay. I am a clown.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And every night we take you through that looking glass on into the great beyond, man. Through the looking glass to the places where other talk shows can't go. They can't. They ain't got the talent. They ain't got the time. They don't have the inclination. They don't get it the way we do. 877-876-PHIL is our number. 877-876-PHIL. And over on the international, worldwide, global, intergalactic web, that's where we are too, World Wide Web at philhendryshow.com. Live streaming video of the show right now, live streaming audio, a download every day after the show, as well as our podcast, as well as our Classic Phil podcast, as well as our news feed, as well as our uncensored rants, and now coming next week, our uncensored video rants. And we're actually ramping up the whole video effort of our website, because that's where it's at now. Not only that, but mobile is bigger than ever, and you can watch our live streaming video tonight on your Android as well as on your Evo. 877-876-PHIL. I'm just waiting to print this story out. We're going to have Doug Danger on the line talking with us about Hawaii 5-0, a little bit about the passing of James MacArthur, but about this television program that was a phenom, and it wasn't really on the air all that long, but it was a show that people watched quite a bit, and they also watched it and made it a part of our culture in terms of the, you know, Bookum Dano stuff and other things like that. Let me get over here. I've got on the line with me from Orange County, Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier. Doug has written a book, as a matter of fact. And it's called The Roots of Race in Hollywood, 1960 through 1970. How many volumes, Doug?
Well, Phil, this is the third volume because The Roots of Race and Racial Problems in Hollywood go way back. And the 1960s are seen as a time when race began to loosen up a little bit, but that wasn't the case. And as a gay man and as a gay journalist, I thought it was a very good project for myself to take on because I have been subjected to discrimination, very aggressive and violent discrimination in my life, as well as have other gays. And so I felt that this book, Roots of Race, would be a good book to write. It's interesting that our book is due for release in November, early first week in November, and James MacArthur has passed on, and we're talking about Hawaii 5-0.
Hawaii 5-0 plays a big part in your book, doesn't it?
It does. Both versions of this TV show, the first, which was out in 1968, and lasted until sometime around 1980, and the other version, the more current version that stars, among others, Scott Conn, and that is the one that's on the air right now.
And that's also CBS.
That is also CBS, and it's also a hit. And
do you, when you say a hit, is it because of the tropical locale? I remember Magnum P.I.
Yeah, that's part of it. There's two things you can't resist with Hawaii 5-0, and that is the action of a police drama that you then couple with the spectacular location. And I think you need that no matter what you do with police drama. We've had it with New York, and we've had it with Los Angeles, and when you see the great police dramas from New York or Los Angeles, you've got the beautiful cities of New York and Los Angeles. Miami, same thing. San Francisco, same thing. Well, with Hawaii, you've got not only a urban look, but you have the tropical, wild, adventurous look of Hawaii. And it is unfortunate that the racism of this TV show, fully supported by the people that viewed it, will keep it, I think, out of the television hall of fame.
Now I want to ask you about the racism of Hawaii 5-0 that you say is very active and still exists.
Absolutely.
But I want to give a little bit of a taste to people who may not know the show as well as some of us. If you are watching Hawaii 5-0 these days, you know of the television program with, as we mentioned, Scott Conn. Here is James MacArthur, who just died, as a matter of fact, and it's, of course, the big, famous...
Hey, I've never seen it before.
Bookum.
I just run this place a week ago.
Bookum.
Oh, you guys must have planned this. You're trying to frame me.
Bookum!
looking for receiving, pushing, and possession. And if we get lucky, maybe murder.
Who faked on me?
Harry, in your lousy business, your best friends are your worst enemies, and we found a friend. Chin, get this down to the lab for analysis. Let's go.
Now, that was not James MacArthur, was it?
No, that was not. That was Jack Lord, but Bookum was what he would say to his sidekick, played by James MacArthur, who was Dano Williams. In that particular scene, he found a joint, he found some weed, marijuana on a perpetrator, and you hear Jack Lord, Bookum, and that was the classic, I guess, part of that television program. But that's also at the roots of what we're talking about here, the terrible tragedy that is Hawaii Five-0, and that was spread for over a decade and now looks to be repeated, although not quite as brazenly.
All right, let's get to this racism that you're talking about, because I'm not saying I'm the most educated guy when it comes to the particulars of race. I will say that I'm familiar that for many, many, many years, Asian actors in Hollywood have complained that there were not enough roles.
Well, here's a TV show, Phil. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, so this is something that I know intimately well, and that is being told, it doesn't make any, what are you, gay, so what? When I say to someone that I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, yes, I want that to matter more than if a guy says, well, I'm straight. Because as a gay man and as a gay journalist, I have far more experience in writing about minorities being discriminated against and stepped on and, you know, all of that. So, yeah, I'll tell them I'm gay. Now, in Hawaii Five-0, Phil, you have some actors there. Cam Fong played Chin Ho. Another actor, Herman Wiedemeyer, who was a Asian actor, and a few others. And they were Chinese, and the characters they played were Chinese. And there was no effort made by the producers of this film, of this TV show, no effort made by the audience to even hide how funny they thought that was.
And now, why was the fact that these were Chinese actors playing, or Chinese American actors? I don't know which.
I think all of them were Chinese American. I think that Cam Fong might have been a Chinese and then Chinese American, something like that. But there was no effort, Phil, made by the audience or by the producers to hide the fact they knew full well that these were Chinese actors. They're playing Chinese characters, and Japan is not represented at all. Now, the Japanese lived on the Hawaiian Islands, as did Polynesians, but you don't see any Japanese, even by name. And this insult went on for over 12 years.
And was it because of the fact that the Japanese, we had just been at war?
I don't know what it was, but it was something that, Even if the producers thought it was amusing.
And do you really think the producers thought it was amusing?
Well, you have to at some point admit that you think it's funny when you've got a Chinese actor with the name Cam Fong, and he's Chin Ho, and Ching, you know, you can almost make a joke out of the Chinese way they're going with it. It's all Chin this and Ching Chang and all of these Chinese names. Not one Japanese name and not one Japanese actor. Now, you can say, well, the producers are stupid or they're racist, but how does the audience, and this is what makes my book, I think, unique, in that we talk about the audience, and I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, all right, Bill?
Yeah, right.
Okay, and the reason why I'm telling you that is because that isn't going to get by me. As a gay man and a gay journalist, I won't let that get by me. Nobody gets anything past Doug Danger as a gay man, as a gay journalist, and that's why in my book I do something that no other book about Hawaii Five-0 has ever done. I tell the truth on the audience. The audience was complicit in this racist presentation for 12 years, and they're doing it again with Hawaii Five-0 right now.
All right, now what's going on with Hawaii Five-0 right now? Are they still not casting Japanese actors?
They're not. They have one actress by the name of Kona Kalukakawa. I have the name, and I think if your producer Jason Rant has the name. I think I had the name here a moment ago, Phil, and I'll tell you what I'll do is I'll bring it up. I've got it up on IMDb. Here it is. Yeah. Her name, her real name, is Grace Park. She's a Korean actress, Grace Park. And guess what she's playing?
Well, she's not playing Japanese.
No, she's not. She's playing a Polynesian Kono Kalakuea, or Kaluka. That is a Polynesian name, and it sounds like the most flimsy of Polynesian names. So you can see that you've got some Korean woman playing a woman named Kono Kalakuea. You got a guy by the name of Taylor Wiley. Guess what his name is?
Well, first of all, who is Taylor Wiley?
Well, with a name like that, I'm well imagine he's black. With a name like Taylor Wiley.
Well, but do you see a picture of him?
No, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and that is the next best thing to having a photograph because, believe me, just if his name's Taylor Wiley and he's playing a guy by the name of Kamakono, that's a black guy.
And well, how do they even credibly present a black guy as a Polynesian?
Because they are banking on the same kind of racial insensitivity that marked the first Hawaii 5-0.
And what it is, it's amazing to me to think that an audience of TV viewers across an entire country would be complicit in ignoring what you call the brazen racism in Hawaii 5-0 and not say anything. Was there not any kind of response?
Well, in those days, still the response of Asian actors and the Asian community in general was very, very minor. No one really paid any attention to them. We're talking the black people, yes, Hispanics, yes, Chinese and the Asians, that was way down the list. Even gays were higher on the list of who we got to get to solve these problems.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Doug Danger is with us from the Orange County Courier. With the passing of James MacArthur, we thought we'd bring Doug on and talk a little bit about Hawaii 5-0, the TV show from 1968. And Hawaii 5-0, the TV show from today, 2010, the new one that stars Alex O'Loughlin, Scott Kahn, Daniel Dae-Kim, and Grace Park. Daniel Dae-Kim, now that is a Korean name, too.
That's a Korean name, and he plays a character named Chin-Ho Kelly. That's the same Chin-Ho Kelly character that was originated in 1968, and that's a Chinese character. So they systematically and step-by-step cut any mention of Japanese people out of this TV show. They didn't want any Japanese. They didn't want any Japanese. Any chance you had to have a Japanese character, you'd call him Fung or Chow. You don't want to go the Japanese route. Any chance you had to give them a name that would be representative of the group of people, the minority that was represented there on the Hawaiian Islands, was the Japanese people, the Polynesian people. I don't know what would be a Japanese name. They decided, let's go the Chinese route, let's go the Korean route. So you've got Kono Kalua, Chin-Ho, Chang Ching, all these Japanese names, all these Chinese names, not one Japanese name.
Is it possible that the producers decided, well, what's the difference?
Yes, it is possible, except the audience did know the difference. The audience could see, look at that. First of all, no Japanese man gets as big as that Chin-Ho character, who was a Chinese character. He was huge. And
what about sumo wrestlers?
Well, sumo wrestlers are a whole different thing, but I'm talking about a big, huge cop, a Chinese cop like that. No one's going to believe that's a Japanese guy. And so they decided that they would just throw it right up in our face and say, guess what, he's not Japanese at all. He's Chinese.
877-876-PHIL with me is Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier talking with us about Hawaii 5-0. His book is called Roots of Race, 1960 to 1968, The Roots of Race in Hollywood. And Hawaii 5-0, a show of extreme racism because the Chinese actors that they cast did not even make an attempt to represent Japanese, which is the part of the racial makeup of the Hawaiian Islands, the local islander people and the Japanese. They were either Chinese or they were, as Doug just said, they were Asianed up Polynesians. 877-876-PHIL. Let me get some phone calls and your comments. Doug has indicted in this entire scheme, not just the studios, but the audience. The audience complicit in thinking it funny that Chinese and not Japanese were cast in Hawaii Five-0. World famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
Of what?
Well, I mean, you have the audience not just watching the original show, Phil. They're not just, it's not just this remake on CBS. They're buying the DVD box sets of Hawaii Five-0. They're encouraging racism by contributing to a really a disgusting show. And the audience, I think, this is the bad thing about television audiences. Usually you don't want to point this out to people. You want to blame the studio. But in this case, what are we supposed to do? When the average American viewer could clearly see they had Chinese, not one Japanese actor, and they were even trying to hide however many Polynesians they could get in there.
And now, they had a Polynesian Herman Wiedemeyer.
Well, which one was that?
That was the uniformed police officer. Herman Wiedemeyer was a Hawaiian who played football.
No, that officer, Herman Wiedemeyer, that was a Chinese guy, too.
No, well, I thought he was Hawaiian.
No way.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, and we're talking with Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier here, and we're discussing Hawaii Five-0 here on the day after, or the day of the passing of James MacArthur, who was a terrific actor and fun to watch on television. 877-876-50. I also want to, what did I just say, 50? 877-876-PHIL. Goodness gracious.
You have to call it Phil 50.
Yeah, I what a Freudian slip that was. Here is Mark on the Phil Hendry Show. Mark, go ahead. You're on with Doug Danger.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you know, I'm hearing this guy talk about Hawaii 50. You know, I used to watch it, and the original series, they're not prejudiced. And, you know, I go to Oahu all the time, and this new one, it's not heavily, you don't have a bunch of Japanese people in Hawaii. So, and you know, Jack Lord was a great guy.
Yes, you do. Yeah, you got Japanese. I don't know. You're talking through your rear end, sir. Excuse me. But they've got a lot of Japanese people there, and they cast Chinese. And the reason why is because they thought that it was funny.
They're heavily
Asian. I think what you're doing is you're pretending like you're trying to blow over the top of this.
Hold on for a minute. When the gentleman says they're heavily Asian,
you have to be knowledgeable of the demographics of Hawaii. It's very heavily Japanese. And then on top of that, Steve McGarrett. As if he wasn't white enough with the name Garrett, they got to extra give him a little bit of extra white with McGarrett. So this is what I'm saying.
Japanese people, you ought to just move to Japan. And then you can help.
I knew you'd say that.
You know,
but the fact of the matter is, we got all kinds of people here.
I've been to Ground Zero. I've been to
you
Japan.
Know,
I love
what,
the culture.
What's that got to do with? What has Ground Zero got to do with Japan? You think Japs did that?
Hey, let's not use the word Jap.
I mean, do you think Japanese did Ground Zero?
The Japanese people culture is very. It's a very great culture, but.
Right, but what's that got to do with Ground Zero? What has that got to do with Ground Zero?
I've been all over Japan. I mean, they're wonderful people, but they're not being prejudiced.
Ground Zero's in New York. Ground Zero's in New York. I've been all over Japan.
He's talking about Hiroshima.
That's right.
All right. Then he can say Hiroshima. We're not talking about Ground Zero's New York.
Ground Zero for the Japanese is probably Hiroshima.
Okay.
I've been all over Japan, but I'm not trying to be a racist. Hawaii, it's not a prejudice show, and they're not being prejudiced.
Well, then why do they have a Korean? Why do they have a Korean playing a Hawaiian?
You know what?
You know
how about Magnum P.I.? Magnum P.I. didn't have Japanese in it. Is that a prejudice show too?
Yes, it did. It had that one Japanese bellhop. Yes, they did. They had it.
Look up Magnum PI, if you could, Jason, and see what we have in the way of their cast. I don't know if they had any prominent Japanese actors or I don't know if they had any prominent Asian actors, to be honest with you.
Yes, they did, Phil. In Magnum PI, they had the bellhop or the bellboy that was always giving Magnum tips on, you know, these different criminals they had on the island. But the fact is, the Hawaii Five-O, with a cast of Koreans, and they're giving them Chinese or Hawaiian names, they don't want to know from Japanese on that show, and I think it's a disappointment. And this gentleman, who's a very nice man, but he's contributing to it by saying, oh, well, you know, it doesn't exist, and why don't we all just stick our heads back up our butts?
Phil Hendry.
Wow. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back. Wow.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL. And, Doug, I know you have with me is Doug Danger talking about what he calls in his book, The Roots of Race in Hollywood, the racist show Hawaii Five-O, because of its casting of Chinese rather than Japanese actors, because of its casting of super white leads like Jack Lord. And it wasn't Jack Lord, it was the name, right?
Yeah, the name they gave Jack Lord, Steve Garrett, and that was the original name. The producers felt they needed to wipe that name up because it just was not going to stand out in a cast that eventually could overwhelm your white actors. You had Chinese actors that were big, tough, and the names were very foreign at that time. So Chin Ho and Tam Fong and all that. So they needed to really get this McGarrett, this Garrett character, and so they added the MC, McGarrett. It added cool as well as a Caucasian emphasis, and I think a lot of the people, the whites, felt a lot more comfortable.
Thanks, Phil. So what was the, I guess, Japanese actors that you were talking about got cut out of it?
The Japanese actors were never, there was never any Japanese actor in Hawaii Five-O. And the reason was, is because of the racism at that time keeping the Japanese out. By the mid-1980s, you had Kwan Hee Lim playing Yoshi Tanaka. That was on Magnum P.I. Remember that guy that was just talking a minute ago?
Yeah.
He said there were no Japanese actors, or there's hardly any Japanese people in Hawaii. I got news for you. Clyde Kasatsu and Kim Him, well, I don't know.
Well, that's not a Japanese name.
But the fact is they were playing Japanese characters. You got Yoshi Tanaka, you got Long Tang.
Is Long Tang, is that a Chinese name, or is that a...
That's Japanese. All right. So Magnum P.I. got it right. Magnum P.I. got it right. But Hawaii Five-O's racism was from beginning to end so blatant on the part of not only the producers, but the audience. And the gentleman who had called Phil, I think, is a very good example of that. That gentleman wanted to play down the racism. Oh, there's no such thing. There's no racism. You know, it's a very tough thing to indict the audience as being complicit in the racist intentions of a television show's producers. But
well, when you say complicit, what you're saying is the audience throughout Hawaii Five-O's run never once said anything in any great numbers about the fact there were no Japanese in the cast. It was all Chinese.
Exactly. And not only Chinese, but now it's Korean. Now, let me tell you exactly what I'm talking about. This is how racist Hawaii Five-O was. Imagine recasting and recutting the Cosby Show, but instead of having the right actors like Cosby, instead of having those actors, they cast nothing but just cold, black, dark-skinned Cubans. Okay? Now, that's the dirty little secret. And the dirty secret is that we can tell the difference between a Chinese guy, a Japanese guy, and a Korean, but we don't stand up and say it. And that's how, in my opinion, that's how gutless the TV viewer was in the 70s. I don't see any difference.
Now, would you say that recutting the Cosby cast with coal black Cubans...
Yeah, because most of the people on Cosby were lighter-skinned black people. Now, you may not notice it, and I may not, but black people will notice it. If I took the Cosby cast and I got rid of everybody and I cast instead people that were so black that literally it was like a dark shape moving across the room until they opened their eyes. And then you'd go, aha. Now, you...
Well, that sounds ridiculous. Why would... First of all, why are you recasting the Cosby Show?
Well, maybe I want to recast. Maybe I don't want to pay all the high salaries. And maybe I think, well, what difference does it make? One black guy look like... I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, all right? So you're talking to a guy that knows a little something about how these things, you know, the subtleties of racism and homophobia and prejudice. I know all about it. When I came out of the closet 2 weeks ago and I found out just exactly how difficult it is out here for gay people, I can well imagine how it is for black people. And so when you take Bill Cosby and you get rid of him and his cast and you put in actors from Cuba or from the hottest country at the equator, let's say, where, I don't know, but I imagine that's where all the really, 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 really black people live.
Where?
If you go and cast the Cosby Show at the equator.
If you go and cast the
to save money.
All right. So you're saying the way I save money is I go to a country at the equator to cast the Cosby Show, and I happen to get actors that are really dark.
Yeah, it, like Seal or this Dimenji Hansu or Yaphet Kotto. You get actors that look like that, that are real, real dark. Are you going to notice? Well, somebody's going to notice. And the American people noticed back in the 1970s when Cam Fong and every Chinese actor that they could scrape together in Hawaii, and the other thing that I write in my book, Phil, that I think is very interesting, is the fact that there were Japanese actors that would show up for casting calls and constantly be turned away. No, 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 no. And they thought it was funny. The guy's name would be Tanaka, Fanuka, something like that. They turn him away.
All right, we're talking here with Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier about Hawaii Five-O and the racism of Hawaii Five-O during the 1970s and the fact that the audience was completely complicit and remains complicit to this day because they've got Korean actors that are playing Chinese, they've got Korean actors that are playing Polynesian, they have no Japanese actors. 877-876-PHIL, this is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, this is the Hawaii Five-O theme, right?
This is the one from the 1960s. And I don't know if they use the same theme or not now, but it was a popular theme.
Talking with Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier as we discuss the Hawaii Five-O television show and what you describe in your book as the essential racist casting of this show.
Let's talk about something here. I'm due to arrive in San Diego. I'm in my car right now, and I'm going to go to San Diego and review a play that's on late. And I've been talking, and my tongue's dragging. So I'd like to, you know, get a...
Well, we don't have anybody really calling to talk to you.
Uh-huh.
Because I to be honest with you, I think that the topic...
Well, let me explain to you, Phil, what it is.
I think the topic is...
No, let me explain it to you, okay? Because I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. Let's get down to it. When I tell the audience that their racism is what made Hawaii Five-O succeed, it's too tough for them. I know exactly what's going on now. Now I know. See, this happened to me when I wrote a column not too long ago about this, and I said... We're all the Japanese actors in Hawaii Five-O, and I didn't get one piece of mail. You know why? Because I scared the hell out of the people that were watching Hawaii Five-O.
When was this?
When the new one went on the air. So now I know. Now I know exactly.
Okay.
That's good. But let me just tell you this, Phil, and I'll tell your audience this, too.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. You're saying that people are afraid to talk to you because you've called them out.
I've called them out. Yes, I've called them out. Them and their parents. The parents are the ones that sat and laughed. Laughed until they were sick that there were no Japanese actors on Hawaii 5-0, just guys named Chin Ho and Cam Pong. And now their children are laughing until they're sick because there's no Japanese actors on Hawaii 5-0. This generation, just people by the name of Tyler Wiley. Yeah, uh-huh.
Now, who does he play?
He plays a Hawaiian. Since when is a guy named Tyler Wiley not black? And since when is a guy named...
Well, you don't know what color the actor is, and I would imagine the producers are going to cast somebody, if he's a Polynesian, who looks Polynesian.
You would imagine. But wouldn't you imagine that they're going to cast someone who should be Japanese, they cast a Japanese guy? Wouldn't you imagine that? If you have a cop show in Hawaii and you need Japanese guys and everybody's named Fong and Chin... That's Chinese, my friend. Now, let me tell you where we're all headed. I know racism when I see it because I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. We've got parents watching Hawaii 5-0 with their children. This means these kids are going to be fed this kind of racist line. And then this feeds into the bullying that we've got going on right now in our schools. The gay kids are being picked on now. The Japs are going to be next.
And let's not talk about the quote-unquote Japs, okay?
Well, do you understand what I'm saying, though?
And I understand what you're saying, but I don't want to be tired of using these racist terms, okay?
What racist term?
Jap.
I don't think I said that.
Yes, you did.
No, I think I said Japanese, or I said Jap. I know what I said, Bill. I said Japanese, or Japanese. But I
No, you. Yes, you did. You said Jap, and I don't want to hear that, if you don't mind.
No, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, Phil. I'm not going to travel down the road of racism, bigotry, hate, and prejudice that so many straights have gone down. I'm not going to do that. Now, as I said to you, I have in my possession information that they wanted to recast Cosby using cold black actors from the equator.
And why?
I think I told you because...
Because they're gonna save on the salary. All right.
Exactly.
What do you mean? Why would you go to the equator, man? You know what I'm saying? What?
I don't know. They might have heard that the actors down there work cheap. But the point is, you and I would know the difference. A lot of people know the difference. But most people, okay, don't care. They think it's funny. Black people would say, wait a second, look at that. I know there's a difference, but we don't, ha, ha, ha. Because a guy that looks like Seal instead of Bill Cosby, who cares?
877-876-PHIL. Here is Amir in La Habra, California on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
How you doing, Phil?
Good.
I have a couple comments. You know, this guy's saying that, you know, there's the major population in Hawaii is Japanese, maybe in the 20s and 30s, but it isn't no more. It's less than 20%. And second of all,
What are the rest? Are they Polynesian? White?
They're white? Hawaiian?
I just
know that it's not Japanese.
Okay. If you're going to put an Asian actor in that cast, then you have to have the Asian group that's represented. Whether it's 20% or not, it's Japanese. It sure isn't Chinese. And you know as well as I do, it's not Korean.
It's closer to 15%. And then the second thing, you don't need to keep reminding people that you're a gay guy and a gay journalist.
I'm a gay man and a gay journalist because of the following fact.
Yeah,
I'm gay.
The things you're saying, that you have racist comments, and they're hurting people. Yeah, you're calling people Japs. You know, you're calling.
You're calling black from the equator.
They're not necessarily you're black because you're from the equator. Come on now.
Oh, really?
Are you telling me
there's white people at the equator? There's white people at the equator?
You need to watch your mouth, man. I mean,
You can't answer the question at the equator.
You know, I'm not going to answer.
And your name, Amir.
I don't know.
Your name, Amir. Are you an Arab?
I'm a Palestinian.
Okay, what if I called you a Persian? How about better than that? What if I called you an Indian?
I'm Middle Eastern. It doesn't matter. I'm not And there's a difference between calling me a Palestinian and calling me a cowhead. There's a difference.
No, there isn't. Not according to you. There's no difference between a Palestinian and a towelhead, according to you.
Wait a minute. No, that's not what the man's saying. The man's saying one is a pejorative term, the other is what he is. You're talking
that's
culture. So if you say that there's a difference, hold on just a sec. If there's a difference.
Look at Phil. Here you go bailing out your callers again.
I'm not bailing the man out. I'm trying to let the man be heard, and you won't listen to him. He said, I'm a Palestinian, but you can't call me a pejorative term. And that's based on your Jap remark. Bigger issue, though, Korean and Chinese. Are you saying that this man, Amir, is no different from a Persian or an Indian? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying if I cast a show about Palestinians with nothing but Persians and Indians, that would be racist.
No, it's not.
And yet...
It's not racist. That's the nature of the business. Maybe there's no good Palestinian actors.
What if I used all Jews? Would that be all right?
It doesn't matter. Jews are the closest people to the Palestinians. Not all Palestinians hate Jews. That's a racist word right there. You're under the assumption that all Palestinians hate Jews. We don't.
If I did a show, a comedy show, the Palestinians with our star Morty Stein, you wouldn't...
What are you saying, man? Are you saying that's wrong?
I don't think it's proper casting.
It's not an issue. Why is it an issue? Why is every time somebody brings up a Jew and a Palestinian, there's got to be hatred?
What if Ruth Buzzi starred in a show about the Palestinian Liberation Front?
Ruth Buzzi.
Let me tell you something. There's more Jews fighting for the Palestinians than there are Palestinians fighting for their own selves. And that's the truth.
That sounds a little harebrained to me.
Look at Doug, you know, you're being frivolous with this gentleman, but you want everybody to take you serious. You want people to take your book serious? You know,
I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. You think I'd bring this stuff up if I wasn't gay?
You know how many times you've said that? You've said that about 50 times. We get it. You're gay and you're a journalist. We get it. But stop saying racist remarks.
Right.
It's going to end up in the wrong place.
I didn't say anything. I said Jap one time.
All right. Well, the coal black stuff. Thank you, Amir, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Eric in Reidsville, North Carolina. Go ahead, sir. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, I've got some issues with this guy, and I'm an actor, and I have red hair, blue eyes. I was born and raised in the Deep South, and I actually played a Jewish father at one time in one of the productions I was in, and it doesn't really matter what your look is or what your natural accent is. If you can play the part and you look like what the director or producer wants to see, then...
What's the producer want to see? If you're playing a Jew, your hair's got to be a little on the kinky side.
Whoa. Hold on for a minute, will you? Just let the man talk.
Well, I don't know what that means, you know.
It's all about perception.
How many Jews have Southern accents? Not a lot. You know. So it's the Jewish redhead is a very rare thing. They do exist. But how big, if you don't mind me asking, how big's your nose? You might have been appropriately... I said the Jewish redhead is a very rare thing, but they do exist. How big's your nose? You may have been appropriately cast. That's what I'm saying.
Well, it's just... It's what the producer and the director wants to see and what they feel like the viewers want to see. It's not exactly who you are. It's what portrays
the part.
Well, it's got to
be, like, for instance, that last guy I was talking to, that Palestinian gentleman. If I cast a Jew in an Arab role... And that guy goes back to his friends, and they put a fatwa on me, and I'm trying to fight racism.
What guy?
The guy that I talked to. If I cast a Jewish guy, and he goes back to his friends and said, let's lay a fatwa on him while the sun's shining and we're still making hay, you know? I might as well pack my gay ass and get it back to the States. And that's what I'm saying to this gentleman here. But I'm sure you're a fine actor, sir. And I know that not all Jews are running around going, if I was a rich man, I know it ain't that, but I'm trying to say that we need to appropriately cast.
Well, look, and you know, Doug, you are one of these purists. If there's a gay character, do you think he should? You know, Harvey Fierstein, I just saw him in New York in Fiddler on the Roof. Harvey Fierstein.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, he was great, but he's gay, and he's playing a straight father and married man. Right? Is that right?
See, they made a mistake. As good as Harvey is, that was racist and bigoted to cast him in that role.
Why? Because he's gay?
Where are you going to cast a gay guy? How is it? You're casting a gay guy as a married guy.
Right.
I've got an extremely
good friend. I know you're from North Carolina, but you got to pick it up, man. Let's go.
I'll do it.
I've got a really good friend of mine, and he's extremely gay, but he plays straight men in his parts.
I'm a gay man.
It's not what you are in real life. It's what you can portray on stage.
You can do. Exactly, the character that you can play.
Okay, great. Go ahead and play a black guy.
You can't play a black guy if you're white. You can't do that. You can't play a woman if you're a man.
The hell you can't. What about Dustin Hoffman and that tootie or whatever that was?
He played a cross-dresser. Anyway, thank you so much, Eric. He played a guy dressed as a woman.
Who?
Dustin Hoffman in Tootsie.
Yeah, but he played a woman.
He did not play a woman. He was playing a guy dressed as a woman.
Well, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. Who are you going to get to play me?
Harvey Fierstein. How about that?
Phil Hendry. Way too fast.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I don't know, it's kind of a dog-eat-dog world out there.
Sometimes you get nervous if they get,
I'm gay myself, and I grew up in Pleasant Plains. And I know what it's like to...
And for you, lots of money.
Say, baby, put down that pipe and get my pipe up.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about every night till the sun goes down. Well, actually, well past the sun going down. In fact, the sun's down when we come on the air here. Our website is philhendryshow.com. I don't know what I was saying there. Our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. So visit us. Watch our live streaming video. Look at the drama behind the scenes as well as the drama on the scene. And if you're lucky, you'll catch one of those nights where I'm going ballistic. And if you're lucky... Anyway, 877-876-PHIL. The creator of Mike and Molly calls the Marie Claire blogger hateful. We'll have Father James McCorders on the line with us here from Belmar Academy in just a moment to discuss the Mike and Molly situation. The whole controversy about, if there is a controversy, I never know whether these things are so manufactured. Do we really care if someone is overweight and they happen to be kissing another overweight person? Is this an issue, or did somebody from this magazine turn it into a phony baloney? Anyway, that'll be Father James McCorders on to talk about that with us. Our affiliate spotlight tonight, Dallas-Fort Worth, KFXR 1190 AM, and in Redding, California, KCNR 1460 AM. Two great stations on the Phil Hendry Show network. So, what have we got here? Mike and Molly... they're going to do an episode, as a matter of fact, folks, that has just been announced based upon this Marie Claire issue, and it will be revolving around, I guess, one of them canceling a subscription. After a controversial Marie Claire column written about Mike and Molly, its creator vowed to incorporate the experience into a storyline on the CBS show. So Mark Roberts, who himself battled weight issues, told Fancast.com that Marie Claire blogger Maura Kelly's post seemed like something someone would say when they're really drunk at a party with their other hateful friends. Father James McCorders is with us. And Father McCorders, I know you've worked with overweight teens as well as being a member of the San Gabriel Valley Diversity Council. And weight issues are part of that, right?
They are part of it, too. Especially when you're talking about young people who have so many other issues, that they have to deal with. And for a young person to not only be struggling with these issues of adolescence, whatever they may be, to also be struggling with their own physical analogies and weakness, whether it's a weight issue or other issues, is terribly troubling. It's terribly debilitating. And we talk with them and try to find ways for them to cope with this, and as well as to interact with the rest of society in a positive way.
Now, let me play for you just, this is just a TV clip from the Mike and Molly show to give our listeners and myself and yourself, Father, an idea what the show's like.
And for you, lads, man, one plain wiener, no bun, no sauerkraut, no chili, no mustard, no pickle, no cheese, no relish.
No tip, give it to me.
Excuse me to inquire. But this meager meal seems insufficient for a man of your tremendous girth.
I'm just trying to drop a couple of pounds.
May I suggest you move to my country, where everyone is fashionably thin due to lack of food?
Well, there you go. That is from the Mike and Molly show. We have with us Father James McWhorter. So the show's about a couple of overweight people who are in love. They show physical attraction to each other and physical affection. And it was the Maura Kelly column, which said that we don't want to look at fat people, that sparked this outrage and this backlash. And now I think that this writer has been forced to apologize, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, it's not my place, I don't think, to comment on whatever the policy was for her magazine. I'm not familiar with it. I will say that I heard her criticism, and I've also heard the criticism of others, as you have. But I think there are places and there are times for these criticisms, and this woman writing what she wrote, which was, I take it, a criticism of how disgusting, I guess, was the word she used, it is to see fat people kissing. If I'm not mistaken.
That's essentially it, Father, yeah.
This is not the time or the place to say this. I think it is probably a truism to say that there are very few of us that would disagree with that. I think it's a truism to say that there are very few of us that want to sit in a restaurant and look at two of these people that are of this physical size, of the physical shape that these people are in. No one really wants to look at two of those people kissing or doing the things that they do, but you can't say these things in public the way this woman did and hope for any sympathy at all.
Well, you work with overweight kids. Are you saying that it's disgusting to see overweight kids hugging each other? Or
I'm saying that it's in the public arena. This writer is saying, we don't want to see fat people hugging and kissing. Well, ladies, I don't think there's any doubt that she's right, but I don't think you say that in the way that she said it. Now, in working with overweight teens, and we have our dances, we have the dance for the teen, some of these children who are not physically attractive, we have a dance for them. And we have areas of the dance floor at the regular dances, the regular teen dances we have for the high school, that we hang some kind of a sheet or some kind of a barrier separation where these children can go and they can dance. Because we recognize that while these children are overweight and deserve to have a good life, no one wants to look at it and no one wants to see it. So that's what we do to try to make their lives better. But you don't come out in the open as this Kelly. And I believe it's
her name's Maura Kelly.
This Maura Kelly woman did, and say, I'm disgusted by looking at fats, kissing and hugging and so forth. I don't think there's any doubt that you're going to find people disagreeing with that. But you don't ever make the issue in public where you denigrate people in public like that. And you segregate, for instance...
You are segregating the fat kids from the skinny kids at the dance? You think that's going to help them deal with their weight issues?
Well, I don't know, Phil, but you do have to create a comfortable atmosphere for both. the skinny ones and the fat ones. I don't know. What helps them with their weight issues is to recognize one-on-one. And when we sit down with the kids, we say to them, well, now, you know, the first thing I want to say to you is, if you're hugging and kissing in public and you're dancing, you know it's going to disturb a great many people. And so we want you to be mindful of that. And then we can get to your weight issue. But before we get to your weight issue, we've got to draw some ground rules here, and we've got to make you aware of something. If you're out in the public and you're kissing and hugging and rubbing, you're going to make people sick. And you have to understand, no way, you can't do it. You know, you don't want these fat kids running the events for the skinny and the... And we have to totally be honest with these big ones about the other people and their feelings around them. And I think you mentioned something like that once, Phil.
I did. Let me give our number. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. What did I say?
You told me that you had been on a Disney cruise with your wife and your children, and you saw two very big women dancing with a little skinny man.
I said I saw...
They were fat women, weren't they?
Well, they weren't obese.
No, but they were fat women. They were big women, weren't they?
They were big women, yeah.
And they had taken this small man, a skinny man, I think you said.
Well, he wasn't skinny. I mean, he was probably a fit guy. He was a little guy. I think he might have been the husband.
And did you see how you almost said wife? You see how it's an emasculating...
No. I meant to say husband. He might have been...
But it's an emasculating thing to be a small, thin man and to be told to go out onto a dance floor. And I'll see you out there. And you know what's going to greet you when you get out there. And that's the big wife. And when you said that to me that night, Phil, my heart sunk for that man. And yet I knew that there was no way you could talk about it on the radio. Tonight I think we had to come clean with it.
Well, I don't know that there's anything to come clean with. I said to you at that time when I was talking to you, I saw these two large women dancing. You know, it's a funny thing about the Disney crew. We took the kids on this cruise, and...
Well, I don't... If you could get to the essential, because... I don't want people to lose interest if you're going to tell us your life story. If you can...
I'm not giving my life story. I'm just saying when you go on something like a Disney cruise, and they have stuff for kids, and they have stuff for adults, and they have nightclubs on this ship for adults. So the reason why I'm saying all of this is I think that some people just loosen up a little bit, and these were two big, you know, women.
But they were fat women. You see how your instinct is healthy. Your instinct is to not say anything about it. Your instinct is to keep your mouth shut and to not say, these two fat women made me sick to look at. And
well, they did not make me sick to look at.
No, you are not going to say that. But the fact that you said you saw them dancing with a little skinny man, a little tiny man, and a man perhaps with no future, perhaps no past. He might have been married to one of the women. He might have not have been married. I don't know. A little tiny man. A little man who might have made a big life for himself. And now the man has been taken out of the dance floor by a big woman. What future does a little man have?
All I'm saying is I think that he probably was the husband of one of these ladies, and it was amusing to me. It wasn't sickening. It wasn't any of those things. It was amusing to me, Father, to see this little guy dancing with these two big women. It made me laugh, but I was not sickened by that, okay?
Well, I'll tell you, Phil, the obese children that we work with, I counsel them, and I think they appreciate my honesty with them when we're in private. I tell them they're fat, that they make people physically ill when they show any sort of affection in public. These fat kids say, thank you for the honesty, Father. And I think it gives them the motivation. But you don't come out in public and say, I went on a Disney cruise, I saw a little tiny man. He went out of the dance floor with two big women. And the next thing I saw was the little man, he was squished between the two fat, you know. You didn't. I know you didn't.
I wouldn't say that because that didn't happen.
But that's the instinct.
No, I don't think so. Well, let me tell you, our 877-876-PHIL. Father James McQuarters has joined us. The instinct to say that looking at fat people having affection for each other does make us ill. Most of us don't say it in public. What Maura Kelly said in her blog, according to Father McQuarters, is pretty much how people feel. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. So does watching large people have affection for each other make you sick? Is Father McQuarters reflecting a view that's held by a lot of people, or is he a little bit off base on this thing? We'll be back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show as we talk about Mike and Molly and Maura Kelly.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back, 877-876-PHIL, here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Father James McQuarters from Belmar Academy joining us. The Mike and Molly episode, well, not the Mike and Molly episode, the Mike and Molly show, was the subject of a column by Maura Kelly in this Marie Claire website magazine. In it, she said that she'd received a lot of complaints and that CBS had received a lot of complaints about looking at fat people on TV, kissing, hugging, having physical affection, and that she herself found it gross. Joining me is Father James McQuarters. You don't necessarily disagree yourself. You're saying that it was going public with it.
Well, you don't go public with something like that. The essential point that must be made is that I don't think Maura Kelly needs to remind anyone. She certainly doesn't need to remind the people at CBS, and she doesn't need to remind myself, she doesn't need to remind you. Maura Kelly doesn't need to remind the people that read her column that when we see someone that's overweight, or we see people, these unfortunate people that are battling this weight problem, or like the ladies that you saw on the ship that night, well, these women were dancing with a little skinny man, a little man, and you can well imagine the debilitation, psychological debilitation, of being a little skinny man with a wife that's a big, fat. I don't know what else to say. What does that do to a man? But you don't go public with it. You don't say it. You don't, as they say now, what's the word they use? The kids say, you don't put it on blast.
You don't put it on blast.
Right, you don't put it on blast. And that's exactly what this Maura Kelly did. And when she did that, she rolled back decades of progress we've made in trying to get these overweight people to understand that while we recognize they've got a right to eat, if they want to eat, they can eat themselves to death if they want to, watch them eat, and then put down a piece of food, put down a greasy turkey leg, and then immediately with the same lips, glistening with grease, planting them on the lips of a loved one. Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
Are you being overly dramatic?
No, you can ask your audience. I get the mail, too.
But are you being overly dramatic? And isn't it insulting? I mean,
I don't want to talk about this, Phil. That Maura Kelly woman forced us to talk about it. That's the problem. I didn't want to talk about this any more than you did. But this woman put it public, and now we have to discuss it public.
877-876-PHIL. Let me go over to our phone calls here tonight. We have Leanne on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Leanne. You're on with Father James McQuarters.
Father James McQuarters, my name is Leanne Mills, and I am a Catholic girl. How dare you ever say that children should be segregated from one another because they are overweight?
You need to go back to your Bible.
You need to read your tenement again. You are in no position to judge anyone.
You're overweight, aren't you?
Children.
Yes, she
they
is.
deserve to be loved.
I agree with you. But why would you hide behind the child when the weight issue is your own?
I'm sorry, say it again.
I said, why would you hide behind the child when the weight issue is your own?
Are you telling me, I have a 14-year-old son. My son stands 6 feet, 2.5 inches tall. He weighs 256 pounds and wears a size 14 shoe.
Oh, God have mercy.
Excuse me?
I said, God have mercy on that child. 6'2", 280 pounds, and he's 10. How old did you say it was, 10 or 11?
My son is 14 years old.
And he's 6'2", 280. I don't know how you're doing the boy a favor. I don't know how you're doing the boy a favor by saying to him, you go right ahead and eat something that's greasy
my
or what have you.
My son is 6'2", and he weighs 256.
Is he eating grease? Is he eating grease?
Did I give him grease? No, I breastfed, Father.
What's that?
I breastfed my son. He's healthy. Check your age bracket and check your documentation.
What's that got to do with... What's that got to do with...
My son does not eat grease. My son plays football.
At the age of 14, you're breastfeeding him?
No, my son plays football.
At the age of 14... You said you breastfed him?
She said she breastfed him as an infant.
All right.
I didn't breastfeed him now. That would be disgusting.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. Well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to be honest with me.
Sure.
How big are you? Let's talk. Let's talk turkey.
Okay.
How big are you?
I'm sorry? I'm driving, so you're
going to... How big are you? How tall are you, and how heavy are you?
Okay, I'm 5'7", and what I weigh is none of your business.
Okay,
I'm married.
So that means you're pushing 300.
No, I'm
and
not pushing
this
300,
is why,
and how dare you make those kind of assumptions? And
why couldn't I? Your son is 6'2", 300, or whatever you said. Why wouldn't I assume that you're hefty as well? And what I'm trying to say, I never told Maura Kelly to write that column. I did not want her to write that column. She wrote the column. Now I have to talk to people, and I have to say to the young ones.
How tall are you?
How tall am I?
How tall are you?
5'5".
You're 5'5" tall. So my son, at 6'2" tall, at age 14.
Right. It's a freak.
Phil Hendry.
Boy.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. It's the number to the Phil Hendry Show every night here. From 10 to 1 on the Pacific Coast, 1 to 4 on the East Coast, we have Father James McQuarters joining us because of this column that Maura Kelly wrote in Marie Claire, which is a magazine website, saying that watching the Mike and Molly show was gross. Watching overweight people have affection for each other is gross. Watching overweight people dancing, having affectionate moments, having physically affectionate moments is gross and is disturbing. Father McQuarters, you work with overweight kids. You work with the San Gabriel Valley Diversity Council. You've said on the show, you don't much disagree with that.
Well, I'm not here to cause the disturbance. I heard the last lady, and I want you to be very much assured that when I say I agree with that, I don't agree with it with enthusiasm. I'm not agreeing with it with an enthusiastic voice. I'm saying that what the young lady wrote in her column, not too far from what the reality is in our country today. In working with the young people who are overweight, and in working with these young people with physical exercise, I've taken a page from something that I'm known for in our clerical work and in the parish, in working with these children. They have often called me the Jesus of the overweight children. I don't compare myself to Jesus, but in many ways, my path in trying to get these fat kids to get out and move their bodies is almost, I feel as if I know what Jesus went through going up to Mount Calvary, falling and having his face wiped, and Simon and so forth, and being beaten. I feel as our Lord did. And so what I did in one of the exercise classes is brought in a fairly substantial cross, like the kind that the Romans might have used. and we had this hewn from a very heavy and dense wood, and had the children, had some of these fat, one of these fat kids do a squats and leg lifts, you know, or put his feet under to do some crunches. And
you had a what? A cross? Like a crucifix?
Yes, this was a big cross that we had hewn, as if it was the one they used on our Lord.
And you had the kids doing what? Deep knee bends? That's very heavy. And what's the point of the cross?
It was to get them to identify with what the rest of us who don't have this fat, the fat hanging, what we have to deal with, what our lives are like in remaining silent as they, all right, as they kiss and rub each other. It's for me.
Kissing and rubbing? You're talking about kids.
Well, but when they become adults. But I never wanted to talk about this publicly if it wasn't for that woman in that magazine who decided she was such a lousy writer. And she decided to write a column about this, and now she's got everyone talking about it. You know and I know, people that don't have this kind of weight problem, we never would have opened our mouths.
Well, now that you are opening your mouth, you say that you have the kids doing deep knee bends with a crucifix because you want them to know what the rest of us go through having to watch them kiss each other. Not what Jesus went through, but...
Yes, Jesus, too. That goes without saying. If I say this is what Jesus went through, they'll go, yeah. But if I say to them, this is what you're putting me through, me, Father James McCarthy, that's a whole different... That's a cat that's different. It's different from a horse. The horse that's a different from a cat, you know.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. I have Dave. Go ahead, Dave. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Father James McCorders.
Father, how are you this evening? Good morning.
Yes, sir. I'm very good. Thank you.
Of course, I want to say, Father, God bless you, because you really need to be blessed right now because you are so off base. You have no clue. You know, I kind of changed a little bit of what I was going to say because now you're talking about you have your overweight, and I'm not going to use the word fat because it's demeaning. You have your overweight kids in class using a crucifix to exercise with? An oversized
crucifix? They're using it as a barbell, as you'd use a barbell. And you're doing these deep bends
okay.
As if it was a barbell across the shoulder.
You have zero credibility right now. You realize that? Do you realize that women in America right now, the perfect size is not perfect, the size zero anymore? Do you realize that?
Zero credibility. When I say that there are, everyone in this country is uncomfortable.
No, don't ride the fence.
How am I riding the fence when I say that all people are uncomfortable when they see fat people kissing? You're riding the fence because you want to appear as if you're an understanding man, and you know and I know that you're not. Are you?
I'm a very understanding.
You're not an understanding
man.
No, you're not an understanding man. You also suffer the sin of ego as you sit there and judge others. I'm telling you that
I'm
as human beings, we
all.
Look... Oh, not at all. No, not at all. Of course not. I'm telling
you
that
you're
all of us, as human beings, you're hiding behind the fact that you've judged me multiple times since you came on this program. You're hiding behind the fact that your ego does not allow you to admit that you're a judgmental man and that you're a man of weakness. And you hide
really?
Behind that.
I am a
that
strong, Christian, God-fearing man, and you are the
no
one that...
No strong Christian, God-fearing man says that he's a Christian, God-fearing man. He lets his actions speak. He does not have to advertise as if in a billboard. And yet you do. And
you are way off.
I'm glad I'm laying some truth on you.
I really do.
I'm glad I'm laying some truth on you. That's the same thing as saying, you've got me, Father. I'm yours.
You're a sad, sad man.
You haven't told me why. All you've done is called me names. Where is he? Is he gone?
I guess he's gone. 877.
Look what I did. See what I did with that Bible banger? Oh, man.
Whoa. What do you mean with a Bible banger?
Well, you know the guy's... probably from a Foursquare somewhere other. But let me tell you...
Well, what is that supposed to mean?
What it means is I made short work of him. I coming in here trying to tell a Catholic priest where... Woo! Oh, man.
I love it. I love it so.
877-876-PHIL. Let's move on to another phone call. And it is Andrew. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show, Andrew.
Hi. I just wanted to comment to the father here about not segregating fat kids from thin kids, because that's just going to leave them open to not being able to handle, dealing with persecution when they get older. You know what I mean? Like they're not going to know how to.
I don't know. What you have to do is you have to show the children that this is their plight in life until such time as they can lose this weight. This lady wrote this column and said we don't want to see these people making love to each other. How many pornographic movies are sold to fat people? I don't know. I don't watch that. But
What does that have to do with anything, sir?
What is the market for a fat man making love to a fat lady?
Yeah.
What does that have to do with anything? Yeah, the man's right.
What does it have to do with anything? What was the column about? The column was about the fat people showing affection and nobody wants to see it.
Well, she wasn't talking about porn. She was talking about, fat people kissing each other.
Right, and all these people agreed with her.
Well, they did agree with her, and then you said because she went public, everybody started jumping down her throat.
Exactly. She should have kept her mouth shut.
I think the father here has more of a problem with fat people than the lady who wrote the column, because he's trying to segregate them.
The whole country has a problem with fat people.
You're making two different types of people now. You got, there's fat, you got your fat sheep, and now you got your thin sheep. Oh, we got to keep the fat sheep away from the thin sheep because the thin sheep get disgusted by them. Who's saying they're disgusted by them? You're saying you're disgusted by them. I got a fat dad, a fat mom, and fat brothers.
And you're fat.
I love them. I love them with all of my heart. And
how big are you?
Kiss anybody. You know?
No, but you got a thing about, you do have a thing about sheep. Because like five times you said sheep. What's that? You see, we do reveal a little of ourselves the more we go blah, 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 blah. And you were running it.
Wait a minute. He's talking about sheep as in the flock.
Well, I noticed he didn't tell me how big he is.
I figured, I'd use the term that a Catholic priest might be able to understand.
How big are you?
But I guess I was a little,
sophisticated. No, we don't use that term anymore because we have cities now, not farms.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
But I can tell you this. As long as you're making fun of fat people behind their back, that's where it needs to stay. That's what I said. And because I said don't go public with it, everybody's jumping down my throat.
Not everybody feels the way that you feel.
Everyone feels the way. Don't worry about it.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's move on to Becky. Becky in Kennewick, Washington. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Becky, go ahead, please.
Hi, Phil. I want to make the point that this priest, I don't feel he should be anywhere near children. You take children in their most vulnerable time, especially when they're becoming teenagers, and then you tell them that they have to be separated, that they have to be hidden because they look different.
Go to behind the sheet. There's a sheet that divides the dance floor.
You shouldn't be around children. You should not be anywhere near children.
This is just telling them to go and dance in this area here. I'm not saying I want to go over and molest them. I don't care.
You're hurting them much more. You're hurting them psychologically.
Well, how do you
you're
know I'm hurting them and I'm not just
not,
hurting you?
They're not good enough to be seen in public, that we have to hide you. And you know,
well, that's what we all think.
Isn't that what we all think? Cookie cutter perfect.
Becky,
it's
I know that when you're a teenager,
God
I remind you when
to
you
make
were
us
a kid.
Different. And, you know, you can say whatever you want to say, but here's the bottom line.
I'm simply saying, reminding you of a time when
children.
You were a young lady
that's
and you were big?
You do. You hurt children.
You don't know that
and
because you're not young
that's not
enough.
Right. I don't care who you are. That's not right.
I'm a priest. I happen to be a priest, and you've got to watch it.
I don't care whether you're a priest.
Phil, she's going way over the line now, Phil.
What do you mean?
She's giving me a hard time.
I don't care if you're a priest. I left the Catholic Church years ago.
You don't care if I'm a priest?
Are you Catholic?
You know what? You're a priest, but you don't act like.
Are you a Catholic, and you're talking to me like that?
I am a Catholic. I was baptized a Catholic.
Oh, yeah. It's on now.
It doesn't matter what.
When I work with those children, I have those children exercise. Do you take them out to exercise? Do you try to get the fat off their ass? No, you don't.
They're not as good as other children.
I'm having them doing deep knee bends with a crucifix. I'm having them exercise. I'm having them exercise.
Yeah, let's have them do push-ups under the crucifix, because that's really going to help their ego. That's going to just do wonders.
I'm not interested in their ego right now. I'm interested in getting the fat off their, excuse my language, ass.
Really, because you're a sex defier?
Everyone is, including you. Becky,
because
people weren't honest enough with you as a child to say to you, Becky, you're a poor, you're a fat kid.
You have no idea what I was like as a child, and you're diverting the argument.
No, but you were a fat kid, right?
The thing is...
You were.
It doesn't matter what I was. Again, you're diverting the argument.
But you were big.
You're trying
were you
to
big?
Take it off of what you're doing to the children.
You had big legs. You had big, thick legs, right? Of course you did.
Doesn't matter.
Well, you forget about what the lady had. We're talking about the kids, and this is what's been the point here. Now, you're saying that the kids are doing deep knee... And what about this thing where you imagine yourself as Jesus?
All right, Phil, don't make a big deal out of that. I said that as I work with the overly fat children, sometimes I think I feel like Jesus stumbling, going up the hill.
You know,
because
I think Jesus accepted everybody for just what they were. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Really.
But that's what I was.
Yeah, you're. Well, no, he didn't. He didn't accept them for all who they were.
Oh,
He did not. Were any of the apostles fat? No, they weren't.
How do you know that? How do you know that?
They were not. There's no way they could have been fat.
Why? How do you know?
First of all, how far did Jesus preach? He preached across the countryside. He preached in every hamlet, every town. Are you trying to tell me that they're covering 30, 40 square miles and he's got a fat slob bringing up the
how
rear?
Do you know
I don't think so.
How do you know
Wait
he
a minute.
Didn't?
How does a fat man cover all that territory and stay fat? Yeah.
I don't know, but you know what?
Well, I do.
Well, what if it was a miracle?
What do you mean a miracle? What's that supposed to mean? He miracled his ass all the way?
You know, Father, your language, too, is a little...
Let's not get off the point. If Jesus is humping it over a 50-square-mile radius, he ain't got no fat man.
Yeah,
it's impossible.
And I'll go back to the original point, which is you don't need to be around children.
Why? Because I made sense? Because I said that there's no way a fat
because
you're segregating the children and you're saying, you fat kids behind this sheet. What do you mean a sheet?
Well, that's all we had. And I just said, you got to get back there. Because, as you know,
maybe
it upsets the parents of the skinny kids.
And just lock them
and just have a complete... Listen, Becky, thank you very much for your call. A world-famous Phil Hendry show. We have heard some pretty strange stuff tonight. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Father James McCorder's on our show. We'll be back in a world-famous Phil Hendry show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry show.
50 square miles. There's no way.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Our program this evening with Father James McCorder is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. You can also watch us online, live streaming video and audio right now at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Father, I know you have a Bible verse, but let me just say this. The points of view that you have been presenting here this evening essentially boil down to one thing, that Maura Kelly, the woman who was complaining about seeing Mike and Molly kissing on TV, the two overweight people, she's right, and that everybody feels that way, and the only mistake she made was going public with it. And so this sense that looking at fat people having affection for each other is disgusting is actually true. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I've been trying for a solid hour to say that.
I've been trying for a solid hour to say, yes, of course, that's how we feel, and we have to do something. Well, let me say that the Bible in Corinthians becomes clear that God doesn't want, he doesn't want us to be overweight or large or fat. Or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You're not your own, for you were bought with a price. So glorify God in your body. You're not your own. You're bought with a price, you see. And that's to say that we belong to God. And if we belong to God, we're going to do the best we can at purifying the temple. Remember in Genesis chapter 1, verse 29, there's another beautiful phrase. And God said, behold, I have given you every plant yield seed that is on the face of all the earth, and every seed in every tree with seed in its fruit, and you shall have them for food. And so we read that Bible passage, and we think in all of our selfishness and our greed, it gives us permission to shovel it in, to eat everything we see, to suck down.
And you're saying that now people are taking from the Bible an excuse to be fat.
Absolutely. If you read that phrase, God gave us the sweet fruit in the... Oh, you can just taste it, can't you? That's how well God wrote. And so, I must say to you, I love these children that people are talking about. The lady, she said her son. But I have to be honest, he's morbidly obese, a lot of these children. God help us all. If some child like that big kid, you know the one?
The big kid.
The big kid, the lady that...
Oh, the lady was talking about her big son?
Right, right. If you take a big kid and you marry him to some big girl, that's where you get a big, you get another big one. And
what are you giving me, Jimmy the Greek here, man? We're talking about...
Well, no, man. I'm not man.
That's what you're doing.
It's obvious, Phil, I think, to anyone. I'm a priest. And
just because you're a priest, as we found out to our detriment, doesn't mean you know anything.
Oh, I get it. So I'm one of those guys who likes to fool around with the little kids. Is that it? Huh? Huh? Is that what you're saying? I like to touch little Susie? Well, I'm not.
And I didn't say that, but I'm saying just because you're a priest doesn't mean you know anything about life. Maybe you got your nose too far in a Bible.
When you, the lady's big kid is what we're talking about.
That's who you're bringing up.
All right. You take a big guy and put it together with a big woman and you get that big kid.
And yeah, you're doing Jimmy the Greek, okay?
I'm doing Jimmy the Greek. You've got a lot of nerve, you know that?
Father, next time, okay?
Maybe there will...
877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
The next time.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Because I think, really, that people are not even listening to this message.
I've never seen it before.
Book 'em.
I just run this place a week ago.
Book 'em.
And in fairness, Larry Summers did a heck of a job trying to figure out.
For me, Mary, it's going to entail a discussion with my family.
He's going to hell this pitch.
Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, right? We're a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, where we go places no other talk show would dare go, no other talk show would dare try. Forget it, man. You know, game over. 877-876-PHIL. Anti-gay school board member Clint McCants is resigning for posting vicious comments on his Facebook page. A new survey reveals just how much we hate people who use cell phones in restaurants. And a man is busted for waterboarding his girlfriend.
Got it. Three great stories right there.
Yeah, I bet you'd like to try the last one, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Gotta admit about that.
Okay, bud. Hey.
Wide awake tonight, man.
I'm awake every night.
Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard with me here in our news hour. 877-876-PHIL. Three pretty good stories. Well, you're right about that, bud. Starting off, this anti-gay school board official, this Clint McCants. Oh, our website, philhenryshow.com. Go over, get a backstage pass, and start spending your subscription money wisely. You subscribe to magazines. You subscribe to newspapers. If you're going to subscribe to a website, make it ours, because you have hours, if not 3,000 plus hours of archived great radio on the Phil Henry Show website, as well as animated clips, as well as video, as well as on-demand video, as well as a news feed, an email, and so much more. PhilHenryShow.com. And starting next week, we open up our merchandise store. First thing we're going to do is sell our legacy CDs, our best of CDs from 1997 on. And
what about that 1999, man?
1999, that's a very interesting year. The best of the Phil Henry Show 1999, brother, I don't even know how many we have, if we have any, because I think people were snapping them up as the millennium was ending. Anyway, we'll let you know when the store opens. 877-876-PHIL. Anti-gay school board official Clint McCants resigns amidst controversial Facebook posts. And we did the story yesterday and pretty much gave you the lowdown. This is some moron who said that in Facebook posts that, you know, fags and queers and all this other stuff give each other AIDS and die, and he enjoys that. He said in a Facebook post that he would disown his kids if they were gay. They would not be welcome in his home. He said that on this day called Spirit Day, which was the other day, Spirit Day was a day of support for people across the world, across the country, who were being bullied or otherwise having a difficult time in life because they were lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. He's talking about teens mostly. And Mr. McCants, who's a school board member, authored some posts that were quite of the opposite view. Responding to the Spirit Day call for supporters to wear purple, for instance, he wrote, "Seriously, they want me to wear purple because five queers killed themselves. The only way I'm wearing it for them is if they all commit suicide." This guy's on a school board. On Thursday, he disowned the comments as, well, I couldn't say, I wouldn't predict that he was going to do it because I don't know what kind of dumbass this guy was. But he obviously was drunk or doesn't understand the reach of Facebook or didn't understand that students and parents would read it or was really pissed off and didn't care. And now he's thinking again about it. But he did say that he was disowning the comments. And I think we have some clips from this guy. McCants is his name. Clint McCants. Here he is telling CNN's Anderson Cooper that he is resigning.
I have never really been too active in terms of being any kind of activist, but seeing these postings about all these suicides of these gay teens really kind of struck a chord with me. And then to see a school board official, someone in my hometown, basically...
Wait a minute. That's... I apologize. This is McCain. This is this dumbass McCants.
I am going to resign from the school board. It is to help my community, to help my school. I don't want them to receive bad press or have a distraction because of some ignorant comments that I made. If they decide later, 5 years, 10 years from now to vote me back in, if my constituents want that, then I'll run again.
He says he's sorry for his comments.
I used some really strong language that, you know, and it wasn't correct. And it was too emotional. I've got two children myself, and I love them dearly. I've got a wife I love dearly. I don't agree with bullying in any shape, form, or fashion. I don't agree with it for any children. And, you know, the words I used were unfortunate, and they're, you know, I should have picked different ones, but it can't be taken back. And all I can do now is extend my apologies for my poor speech.
Well, he's a stupid man, and he's a bigot, and so he's done. And the reason why he's apologizing was in the very first comment there. He apologized, and he said, and if they want to, you know, somewhere down the road. Now, we said this in our pre-show, our 9 to 10 show, our uncensored video cast hour. We said the reason why he apologized as he was stepping down was because he was told that that's what he was going to do.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. Why did you say that?
The reason why I said it is it was the clue was there in the first comment when he said, and if somewhere down the road...
Yeah, if you want to run again.
If he wants to run again. I hope that the people... Well, for him to run again, he's going to need the support of certain people. He's going to need the support possibly of the people that helped him get into office the first time. He's going to need the support of a certain segment of the political machine such as it is in Midland, Arkansas. And someone told him, well, if you think you're going to be in politics again in any way, shape, or form, school board, what have you, you're going to go and you're going to do this. You're going to apologize. See? Now, you don't have to, but that's what you're going to do. And he, well, do you, yeah, that's what's going to happen if you want our support. If you don't, I don't give a damn if you walk out and get hit by a bus right now. It doesn't make any difference to us. If you want our support, we may be able to bring you back. We may be able to rehabilitate you. If that's what you want to do. Do you want to do that? Well, I'd really like to run again for, oh, okay, well, 5 years, 10 years, okay. What you're going to do is you're going to apologize, then you're going to keep your mouth shut. Go back to whatever it was you were doing, your TV repair business or selling shoes or whatever you do. And when the time comes and we feel it's right for you and we can make it right, we can make it, we can sell it, we can say this is a, and this was the old guy, here's the new guy, and here he is being photographed with gay teens, and over here he's being photographed with underprivileged whatever, and here's another, again, here's something else, and man, we'll make you look, we can clean it up. I don't know if we can get you run for president of the United States, but we could probably get you back on a school board, but it's going to take work. And the first thing you're going to do is you're going to go out there and apologize, and you're going to quit. Well, hell, I don't think I... What do you mean, hell, you don't think? That's exactly what you're going to do.
Yeah, but that guy didn't sound like the kind of guy who wants to be told what to do.
Well, guess what? That's what happened. He may not like it, but that's what he's doing. He's sitting there keeping his mouth shut, and they're telling him. And I hope somewhere down the road I'm going to... Yeah, somewhere down the road? Somewhere down the road, man, ain't never going to get here unless you do thus and so. Believe me when I tell you, man.
So what do you think they're going to do, man, about, like, 5 years, put this guy up there again?
Well, I don't know why anybody would elect this guy to do anything other than maybe, take the boards out at night and scrub the grease off of them if he worked in a kitchen. That's about it. That's what I give him the job to do. I don't know what he knows how to do. He doesn't sound like he's very bright. He sounds, he's obviously a bigot. He didn't take any of that back. He doesn't like gay people, which means he doesn't like gay teens. I don't give a damn if he said he doesn't want them to kill themselves or not. It's got nothing to do with it. He's an idiot. Now, maybe somewhere down the road they can use him. I don't know. Maybe his old man's got influence. Maybe he's got money. Maybe his wife's got some juice. I don't know. There's some reason why they put this dumbass on that school board. It sure as hell isn't because the guy's smart.
Yeah, it might be a... I don't know, maybe, yeah, I think he might be related to somebody.
He's probably related to somebody. He's probably got a judge or something in his family. I don't know. So he's all pissed off and bummed out, and he says, hell, Johnny, I don't know what the hell's going on, man. All I said, I mean, it's in the privacy. You stupid ass, you said it on Facebook. What are you, a brain-dead idiot? I put my name out there. I, you know, God knows what kind of conversations he's had with people. People are probably saying, you know that I went to bat for you, man? I put my name next to yours. Yeah, well, I guess that's tough. Tough? You keep talking like that, man, they won't find you. What you doing? You threatening me? Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm threatening you. You keep go ahead. You make this into some kind of a big joke, Jack. Tomorrow, man, they won't know what happened to you. And they'll be looking for a search. They'll have a search party looking for your genitals over here. And your head will be on a beach over in the East Coast. And, oh, man, Jimmy Hoffa, if they think it was tough finding him... You go ahead and make some jokes about it there, hick. Now, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go. You're going to quit. You're going to go back. You're going to keep your mouth shut. 5 years. Remember that movie we were watching, Bud, Goodfellas?
Yeah, yeah. I love that story. He's like, it's going to be beautiful. You go down to Florida with Jimmy.
Right. You go down to Florida with Jimmy, and you come back, and then maybe we'll see what we can do. Otherwise, you keep running that fat mouth of yours, you're done. And that's the way politics is, folks. It's not much different from... And I didn't learn that in a movie. You know who I learned that from? I learned that from my father, because my dad used to talk about business all the time. And my dad never pulled any punches when it came to business. He was always talking about what a rough and tumble world it was and where it was and how you had to draw the line and how you had to sometimes take your lumps and how you had to stand there and listen to somebody berate you. Or when the shoe was on the other foot, how you could stand there and exact promises from someone. I mean, this business, the one thing that America taught the whole world, business. Politics? No. And this is not the mafia. We're not talking about La Cosa Nostra, some Hollywood bullcrap. This is what goes on every day in the American world of business. And it's been going on since the beginning of time, and since the beginning of the country. And maybe we can put it on Alexander Hamilton because he was hanging around with all those what they called stock jobbers. I don't know what the hell it was, but that's the way it is. And it infiltrated every other aspect of our lives, politics, everything. You want something? Yeah. Well, here's what is going to happen if you want it. Well, I don't know. Well, then you aren't going to get it. And all of the big talk and all the hot air and all of the blah, 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 blah and threats doesn't mean anything unless you got leverage. If you got some leverage, which means you got something the other guy wants, then you got what's called leverage. If you don't, you got to shut up and take it. This is what dumbass here's got to do. All right, 877-876-PHIL. What are you doing with a ruler?
Look at the leverage.
That's not leverage. That's a slide rule. Give me that. 877-876-PHIL here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. And coming up, we'll tell you why a man waterboarded his girlfriend. Well, do we need to explain? I'm kidding. We'll tell you why a man waterboarded his girlfriend, plus a new survey reveals just how much we hate people using cell phones during a meal. How much? We'll tell you. PhilHendryShow.com.
Phil Hendry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show. Check out our website next week. We're going to start a series of video rants. If you go to our website right now, uncensored, our uncensored pre-show rants are on there. We've got, and I mean, we just blister people. During our uncensored pre-show, we blister people. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. I mean, we eviscerate the issue of the day. Anyway, we've got a bunch, and our latest is on the mortgage modification fraud, which is exactly what we call it, and it's over there on our website, philandryshow.com. Next week, we've got some video rants that we're going to be doing. All right, Zagat, the restaurant guide, has come up with something that, frankly, I'm glad they've publicized, although it's not any great shakes in terms of news. 63% of Americans frown on cell phone use during meals. Now, I'm not so sure that I would be a part of that 63%. It depends on the restaurant. Americans have a mouthful of complaints about diners who chew the fat on the phone. According to Zagat's restaurant guide, 63% of Americans turn their noses up at cell phone users who make calls or hammer out texts during a meal. While most New Yorkers said the food faux pas left a bad taste in their mouth, some admitted to pulling out their PDAs in certain company. One guy, Michael Watts, in Washington Heights, said, I do it on occasion, depending on whom I'm with. I have a few friends that are so addicted to their phones that I have to reprimand them in a friendly way, said one tourist. Texting's okay. Talking on the phone is not, said another. New Yorkers understood the urge to share snapshots of a mouth-watering meal. Crap like that. Tourists, you know. So, I don't have a problem with that. If somebody is in California Pizza Kitchen, what are you going to do? I mean, you got people that are with their families, their kids, their teenagers, and everybody's together, and they're, you know, In-N-Out Burger, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, man, In-N-Out Burger, you're going to text.
Yeah, but if you're at In-N-Out Burger, that's a whole other thing, because the burger is so good. You're never not going to. You got to text with a burger like that sitting in front of you? I'd rather eat it and everything.
Well, it depends. Yeah, bud. The burger ain't going to go away, you know.
Yeah, but I'm going to eat it and then have the grease on the phone.
Well, all of those things are fine. You know, I don't even know if those are issues, man.
What are you talking about, man?
Are you going to text on a burger?
Text on a burger?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
It means if you're having a burger.
If I'm having a burger, am I going to use my phone?
Yeah.
Probably not, no. I might wipe my hands off first.
Oh, well.
Yeah, you didn't think of that, did you?
You didn't think about wiping your hands off?
Well.
Here's the point, man. It depends on the restaurant. I ain't got a problem with somebody texting or yakking on the phone if I'm in the In-N-Out Burger or if I'm California Pizza Kitchen or if I'm at the damn pizza joint or wherever it is I am, where it's kind of a, you know, one of those joints that's a family friendly and everybody's running around and the kids are running and they're going and they're getting, you got to expect it and that's where it's at. Now, if I'm sitting in some really nice place, you know, if I'm sitting with my wife or my girlfriend for a romantic evening and we've got a nice, beautiful meal that we're sitting down to and Charlie's over here just bap, 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 bap on the phone, that'll piss me off.
Yeah, I was going to say, that you don't want that either, man. You're paying a good price for that.
Why is that any worse?
Because there's a certain mood, man. I think it's all about mood. So I don't think it's very, I don't think it's a good survey to say, and I'm not criticizing Zagat. You know, these guys, restaurants and restaurant review and restaurant business is the business of these guys. They've been doing these surveys and they've had their restaurant guide for God knows how long. They found that the number one complaint for diners was service, with 24% of Americans saying men are treated better than women at restaurants. Really?
I don't know how that's true, man, especially a lady. Don't you think a lady get a good service if it was a man?
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, the guys are going to treat a lady better, a lady going to treat a guy better.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. I don't know if it's subconscious. I would like to think that food servers, if they're professionals, you know, but sometimes it's perception, man. And if you say, oh, the service in there sucks, well, I don't know what that means. That doesn't necessarily give me a clue because the people that might have been sitting down saying that might have been real jackasses. You know, now I did get I went into a restaurant one night and they said the place, I read a review online and it said fantastic food. The service is not that good. And, oh, I know what it was. It was the Chicago Rib Company. You know that place?
Yeah, I know that joint's up on Main Street, about three door down from 3rd and Main.
Yeah. And I went in there, and we had dinner. The service was great. It was great. And it was funny, because when we sat down, I sat down at a table that was far away from everybody, because I didn't want to listen to a whole bunch of people yapping, because the restaurant didn't have, like, any carpeting, so it didn't absorb noise, so it's all just... So we went in the back, and I thought, oh, this is great, man. Nobody's going to see us. And they came right away, you know.
Who?
The waiter.
Yeah, but you said the service is bad.
No, I didn't say that. It said it in a review. Are you listening to what I'm saying, man?
You gotta listen, man.
I did.
It said it in a review online that the service sucked, and it wasn't. It wasn't bad. It was good. It was very good, and the food was very good. So I can't really trust some of these jackasses. Plus, you ever read those online reviews? How do you know the guy that's writing that review wasn't, like, fired?
Yeah, I was gonna say, man. A lot of the people who write those reviews, like, they know the owner and they hate him. They got a business problem.
Well, why would they lie about it?
They lie about it, bud, because they don't like people personally. They have a personal axe to grind. You know what I'm saying? It's really, I don't read any of those reviews, man. Not any, I don't really take them seriously.
Well, how come you read that other one?
Because I was stupid that night. All right, coming up, I don't know, man. A guy gets busted for waterboarding his girlfriend. Did you watch last night's Modern Family or the World Series? Let's find out. PhilHenryShow.com.
Phil Hendry. This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
PhilHendryShow.com is the website, and welcome back to our show here in television. The ratings, World Series down from last year. The first game of the World Series was down from last year's Yankee-Philly matchup, and just to show you how interested I am, I don't know who's in the World Series.
It's the San Francisco Giants in Dallas.
Dallas?
No, I mean Texas.
Texas. Forgive me, folks. Baseball fan, I ain't. Not if the blue ain't in it, man. I don't care.
Who's the blue?
Dodgers. And I know that sounds lame, and it's what do you want me to do, lie? I don't watch it. I don't watch it. I don't watch it. I don't watch it, man. Not baseball, man. Not since this strike. Not since that 94 strike. Not since they blew that whole. And I know it sounds stupid, but that's just how I am. You know, when they butchered up the World Series in 94, it wasn't the World Series in 94. I just, you know, I'm done. Ain't that interesting a game to me anyway? I played it in high school. I played it as a kid. I'm actually a pretty damn good baseball player. I played catcher. I had a hell of an arm. I don't care.
Yeah, but I mean, it's America's pastime and everything.
To the extent that I should know a lot about it for my audience, you're right. But my audience is going to sit there and say, this guy isn't really a baseball fan. Why is he even pretending? Nonetheless, go whatever.
Giants.
I ain't rooting for the Giants. Yeah, hi, everybody in San Francisco. Yes, I hope the Giants win. And you guys in Dallas, the Rangers, all right.
Man, you almost gave that away, man.
I love the Giants. First game of the World Series gave Fox a ratings win Wednesday night, although its numbers were predictably down compared to last year's Yankees-Phillies matchup. ABC's comedy block, meanwhile, grew considerably over the last week, if you don't mind the term comedy block. Actually, Modern Family is very funny. Modern Family and The Middle, both scoring their biggest audiences ever. Fox drew 13.4 million viewers and an 8.1 rating 13 share in prime time. Those figures will change some because of its live World Series broadcast. Fox had 13 million, CBS with 11 million. This is just the TV ratings on Wednesday night. ABC, 7 million. NBC, 4. Boy, NBC sucks on wheels, don't they?
Well, man, they ain't got nothing.
5 million viewers, NBC. They took fourth as both Law & Order aired repeats. The CW scored 2.5 million viewers and a 1.6. So anyway, Fox led with adults, 18-49. That is a great rating to have because that's the up-and-coming audience of the future. And they won by a good margin over CBS with a 3-0. This is an 18-49-year-old adults. ABC finished third at 2-7. NBC a 1-3. A 1-3? Narrowly beating out, what's CW?
Country Western or something.
Country Western? What the hell is CW, man? It's got to stand for something decent. Oh, that's the old WB. Huh?
Yeah, it used to be Warner Brother. Now C. Warner.
C. Warner. Well, figure it out, will you? So at 8 p.m., Fox's World Series game won that hour, 15 million viewers. CBS second with Survivor Nicaragua. At 9 p.m., it was Criminal Minds winning, and the World Series game suddenly dropped to 13.6 million viewers. So it bored people to tears. And finally, at 10 o'clock, Fox came right back up again with the World Series 11.4 million viewers, and CBS had The Defenders. Is that the same show that used to be on in the 1960s with E.G. Marshall and the guy that eventually played the dad in the Brady Bunch?
I don't know.
Thank you. So there you have it. Those are the numbers, and that's the way it shakes out. And Godspeed, my brothers. Godspeed. Man busted for waterboarding his girlfriend. So if you didn't like what was on TV, and you were upset with what was on TV, and maybe your team wasn't winning on TV, what do? Waterboard your girlfriend. After accusing his girlfriend of cheating on him, oh, that was it.
Yeah, I thought it was something serious.
Right. A Nebraska man allegedly tied the woman to a couch in their apartment. I shouldn't be making a joke about this, you know.
Yeah, but it's waterboarding. She ain't going to die or nothing.
Well, I don't.
You said that you can't die from the waterboard.
I don't know if that's true or not, man. I don't know anybody that has died from it. Everybody I know has been waterboarded. Good God Almighty, you talk about being waterboarded. The only other thing that people have done less is being tased, or maybe more. How dangerous could it be? Every journalist, every talk show host, everybody in America has been waterboarded except me. When I asked who did I ask?
You asked Captain Dye.
That's right. I asked Captain Dale Dye, will you waterboard me? He said, you fat ass, I ain't going to waterboard you. They'll put me in jail for manslaughter. I said, thank you. Trevor Case, age 22, has been charged with domestic assault, false imprisonment, and making terrorist threats in connection with a bizarre incident on Saturday morning at the Lincoln home he shares with his 22-year-old, with the 22-year-old victim. Police allege that Case stuffed hospital socks into Danielle Stallworth's mouth bound her wrists with belts and hair ties before placing a shirt over her head and dousing it with water, according to a Lincoln Police Department report. He poured a pitcher of water on her head. She started freaking out and thought she wasn't able to breathe, cops noted. The waterboarding practice, of course, leaves victims with the sensation that they are drowning. As she was trying to get up, she clawed Case on his chest, cops reported. When the couple's young daughter awoke and came into the living room, the situation calmed down. When questioned by police, Case admitted arguing with Stallworth, but denied tying her up. He claimed that a scratch at his chest occurred while wrestling with a friend. In other words, he was lying through his teeth. What a scumbag. An officer noted observing injuries on Stallworth's wrist, arm, and thigh, all of which were photographed. Case is being held on $150,000 bond at the Lancaster County Jail. The police report reveals that Case was convicted last November of domestic assault against Stallworth, with whom he's been involved in a relationship for 5 years. 5 years! There's one reason why they're with these guys for 5 years. They can't get away from these scumbags. These guys will chase them. They follow them. They follow them everywhere. The only thing that's going to call off the dogs is you finally take a baseball bat to the guy one fine night and make it not worth his while to follow the woman anymore. The other reason is because these chicks can't do without him. They for whatever reason, they keep going back. He needs me. He's, I make him better. I can calm him down. One of the biggest fantasies that women have got is that they can change men from being animals into sweethearts.
That one said on Unforgiven. And remember that guy, William Money? He said, like, his wife and everything changed him down from being a killer?
Yeah, that was a movie.
Yeah, but that was a great story.
I don't care if it was a great story. Talking about Unforgiven.
Yeah, and he said his wife calmed him down from being a no good, no count piece of crap, eat the whole out of a donut.
I understand. I know what she supposedly did. That's a movie. And that's the fair fantasy of all American men and women. Oh, well, when he met her, hell, gee, she just did this, that, and something else. No man changes unless he himself decides that he wants to change. No woman changes a man.
What are you talking about, man? What if a guy is so in love, he don't want to lose a good thing? He don't want to lose how do they say it? He don't want to lose that good thing he got.
What do you mean, how do they say it?
I'm talking about like in a song.
Well, what are you guys talking about, man? The fantasy is almost like that. You remember that magic Negro thing, Robert? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, Whoopi Goldberg. And what do you mean, Whoopi Goldberg?
Well, she's in Sister Act.
Yeah, I guess that is a magic Negro movie. Anyway, I don't want to... The point is, it's one of these fantasies. It's one of these hallucinations. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. He may say, boy, this is a wonderful woman. I love her, and I don't want to lose her. That's a guy making, adding 2 + 2 = 4. I better change my ways. But no guy who's an animal hooking up with a good girl, a nice woman... You know, a chick that, is doing good in her life and is, loves him. If he's a slob and a scumbag, that's what he is. And she's going to wind up getting killed or getting waterboarded. Or in the case of this young lady, she got waterboarded and now he's in for 150 G's on bond and she'll probably find the money and bail his ass out. Wall Street reform architect Barney Frank fights for survival against an Iraq vet by the name of Sean Bilat. This is in Boston, and are we all done with the waterboarding thing?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't agree. I think that movie is great.
That's fine. You enjoy yourself with Unforgiven. I think it's a great movie, too, but it's another one of those fairy tales. That's all I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah, you piss off Clint Eastwood.
Well, what is he going to do, man? Put on his dirty hairy gun and come and get me? I'll piss off Clint Eastwood. Representative Barney Frank, the outspoken, witty Democrat closely tied to the 2008 U.S. bank bailout. How do you like that for some wit, Barney?
That ain't too funny.
That ain't too funny at all, man. The witty, outspoken, closely tied to the U.S. bank bailout. He ain't laughing at that. Faces a tough re-election battle after 15 terms in office at a time when incumbency itself is a liability. Liability. Challenging the Massachusetts liberal is Republican Sean Bilat, an Iraqi war veteran, and opinion polls suggest Frank has an uncomfortably narrow lead over a political unknown, given that 12% of likely voters remain undecided on who to elect. Now, what was Rance telling me? He said that Frank's cool.
Yeah, he's another Bonnie Frank. It's scary, but Bonnie Frank probably going to win.
Yeah.
Here is Republican Sean Bilat. He's hoping the tough economy and high unemployment will help him defeat Barney Frank, the Democrat of Massachusetts.
We need jobs. How can we create more jobs?
If we want to grow jobs in this country, we need leadership in Washington that understands what it takes to do that. We got to stop these job-killing regulations so that businesses can start hiring again. We have leadership who's never worked in the real world, who haven't had to grow companies. I have. We need people in Washington who are going to say no to unnecessary spending and who are going to give us our money back and grow this economy. I'm Sean Bilat, and I approve this message.
Well, you know, it's a very attractive campaign. He's an Iraq war veteran. He's a business owner. He's a young guy. Barney Frank is 70. He's got, you know, there's a lot going for him. But Frank is the known factor. And as they say, and I know people, you know, when they talk about throwing out the incumbents, it's a very dishonest thing. Because when they talk about throwing out the incumbent, they ain't talking about their incumbent. When you hear people say, we got to throw the bums out, they're rarely, if ever, talking about their own bum. Throw the bums out? You want to throw out Ron Paul? Tell me about the bums you want to throw out, man. It's generally your bum, not theirs.
Yeah, it's like the guy that they don't like is another guy.
Exactly. So they're never going to be throwing no bums out, man, because they don't want to throw their own bum out. And then they get pissed off when their own bum gets thrown out because some people took it serious. Okay, I'm throwing the bums out. Well, not my bum. I mean, isn't that what you said? Well, I said that, but I don't mean him. Well, who are you talking about? The guy in the next district. I don't vote there. Well, then we can't throw the bum out. Oh, okay. Let's just hope that they throw his... That, oh, okay, I'll pray hard. God, that's about how much sense American politics makes. A recent opinion poll showed Frank with 49% of likely voters, Bilat at 37, and 12% undivided. Oh, he ain't going to win. Something's got to happen.
Yeah, Barney Frank got to get, I don't know, he got to die or something.
Well, don't say that, because people are going to, if he does, they're going to trace it back to you, Robert.
I didn't do anything.
Yeah, they will. You're on the radio going, Barney Frank need to die. And if they call me in to testify, I'd have to tell the truth.
Oh, okay. It ain't going to happen. Massachusetts has already been the scene of one of the year's biggest upsets when Republican Scott Brown won a special election for the U.S. Senate, for the Senate seat held almost 5 decades by the Democratic Party pillar, the late Edward Kennedy. If Barney Frank loses, it would be as significant as Scott Brown's win. You'd really begin to see the depths of this anti-government sentiment, said Mark Landy, professor of political science at Boston College. Now, that's a very intelligent statement. I think he's probably right. So just how serious is this country? And just how deep will this sentiment go? American voters are in a surly mood over the weak economy, unemployment near 10%, and the state of the housing market as banks face scrutiny over how they handle the paperwork and home foreclosures across the country. Frank has been chairman of the powerful House Financial Services Committee for almost 4 years. He helped to broker the $700 billion fund to bail out banks at the height of the financial crisis. He promoted legislation to slow foreclosures and keep afloat Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the federally funded companies that own or guarantee more than half of the $11 trillion in U.S. mortgages. Now, you see this guy helping to fund the banks. You see this guy helping to slow the foreclosures and keep Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac afloat. The federally controlled companies that own or guarantee. Those two things I've got no problem with. I'm glad those two things were done. I'm glad that and say what you want, but those two things put a little bit of confidence back into the financial sector.
Yeah, but what were you talking about last night then?
I was told what I was talking about last night with a guy. Here's the one thing nobody ever talks about. Barney Frank, Scott Bilat, bum, bum, boom, boom, boom. Who are the guys running the banks? Anybody ever talk about that?
Yeah, you can't vote on them.
There you go. You can't vote on them. Ain't that the truth? You can't vote on them, man. You think you're going to throw Barney Frank out? Great. Maybe you're going to get a guy in there who won't act when we need them to act. Maybe he's a conservative. Maybe he thinks bank bailouts are this, that, or something else. But you're never, ever, ever going to be able to address the problem. The jackballs that run the financial sector of this country, how many of them even know what they're doing? 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
That's pretty far out to me.
PhilHendryShow.com. Head on over, grab a backstage pass, and get the full Marvy experience of the Phil Henry Show. Here's a very valuable thing. This is rare. I mean, we read news, and it's interesting, but does it help anybody? Of course it doesn't help anybody. I don't blame you for saying, what the hell am I going to do with that, Henry? So you just told me a story about some guy that waterboarded his girl. So there's another jackass we got to deal with. You're right. You're absolutely right. Just an education on the freaks that live in our midst. Well, here's something you can use. Top 10 best value private colleges in America. Private. Best value. So I'm going to start at the bottom of the list here, number 10, and we'll work our way to number 1. And I haven't even looked at the list past the first few, so I don't know what kind of prices we'll be talking about. And remember, there are such things as scholarships, and then if that doesn't impress you, maybe you can't afford this anyway. Neither can I. Okay, so Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York. At one time, this was an all-women's college, Vassar, the first accredited women's college in America, as a matter of fact. It boasts a sticker price for 1 year, two semesters, $53,980. Yes, I know it's expensive, but it ain't nothing compared to some of them. Anyway, it is the most expensive of the top 10 colleges. Financial aid knocks 61% off the cost of the now co-ed college, though. And the average student debt upon graduation is about $19,000. Not bad. Number 9, Hamilton College in Clinton, New York. Hamilton College's sticker price, $53,060. Now, these are top value in private colleges. Hamilton College, financial aid takes care of two-thirds of the Hamilton College sticker price for 1 year, leaving a net annual cost of about $17,500. The average debt for a graduating Hamilton student is $19,500. The college was named after founding father Alexander Hamilton, who served on the board of trustees but never set foot on the campus. Why? He was in debt. Now then.
You kidding?
Well, I'm not kidding about him being in debt, but I'm joking about. I just want to get something. Which gives you the best education for the lowest net cost? Okay, good. Just because it's private doesn't mean it's a good school. So this is talking about El Cheapo private colleges that are still quality educations. Next up, number 8, Amherst College in Amherst, Mass. Their average financial aid package is the largest of the top 10 schools, reducing its price to $52,522 sticker price, 75% to the lowest net cost, just over $13,000 a year. The Amherst grad averages $11,000 of debt. Why so little? Amherst gives all lower and middle income families grants, not loans, so you don't have to pay them back. Number 7 is Claremont McKenna College in our own Claremont, California. Claremont McKenna's sticker price, $53,625, but they offer a 64% financial aid reduction, $19,000 a year after financial aid. It's one of the 5 Claremont colleges, Harvey Mudd, Pitzer, Scripps, and Pomona, located 30 miles east of L.A. Students who enroll in one of the colleges can take classes at any of the others, and all 5 schools appear in Kiplinger's top 100 best value list. Big deal. Bowdoin College in Brunswick, Mass. is number 6, and their sticker price at $53,680 is reduced by 63% to $20,000 a year, and most polar bears, yes, that's their mascot, graduate with an $18,000 debt. That's Bowdoin or Bowdoin College in Brunswick, Mass. Number 5 is Davidson College. $48,029 is the annual cost, but with the reduction of price, 26. What? Top 10, Davidson Mass. Highest cost, $26,067. They do offer generous merit scholarships. Washington and Lee is number 4 with a sticker price of $52,000. The average debt upon graduation is $23,000. Number 3 is Williams College in Williamstown, Mass. $53,000 a year, but they can reduce it down to $19,000 a year. Number 2, Pomona College in Claremont, California. Why do they call it Pomona in Claremont? Anyway, $52,000 knocked down to $18,000. And then Swarthmore in Swarthmore, Pennsylvania. $52,000 knocked down to $19,000. And our producer is Jason Rance. Our technical director, Charles Wagon. Our associate producer, Dan Northcraft. All 3 of you'd be happy to educate you if you're the right woman.
Phil Henry.